guys. Welcome once again to the Professional Goblins Podcast. As usual, I'm one of your co-hosts, Scott Gladstein. With me today, as always, is...
Mike Myler. Hey, everybody. How you doing?
And now joining us...
As me, Savannah Broadway, and my co-pilot, Pelly.
Hey, Pelly. We are honored to have you on our show. And our guest today, introduce yourself. Tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline Brick. I am better known as Jax. I'm a freelance writer, game designer, social media manager for Damocles Thread Development, and winner of the 2016 Golden Cobra Award.
Ooh.
Congratulations.
Very, very fancy.
Thank you.
Did you say Golden Cobra?
Yes.
That sounds like the most badass award.
Yes.
Please tell me there was an action figure Cobra involved.
Sadly, no. But there was Jason Morningstar, and that was pretty awesome.
See, I was just imagining it had something to do with the Karate Kid and, like, Cobra Kai and everything.
No, but I won an award for most convention-ready design for a LARP,
cool.
So that was pretty awesome.
You are my people. There are not enough LARPers out there.
That is true.
I actually have my story today is related to one of those.
I think I've already told how I'm not allowed to go back to Argo.
Yeah, you have. Yeah.
I don't think I was there for that, but I'll go back and watch that episode.
Long story short, you pickpocket everybody. Everybody hates you.
There you go.
Not, yeah.
That seems to follow, yes.
So, as we don't have a review today, do we just want to roll into the game stories?
Let's roll in. Normally, we would start off with a review, but last week's guest did not provide us with a product, which happens all the time. We're all very busy people. We don't hate you, Dwayne. It's all right. Or Dwan, it's all good. But yeah.
Oh, am I supposed to provide you a product? I can provide you a product.
Definitely.
Yes, do that, and then next week we will review it at the start of the show.
Well, I'm actually going to give you my Golden Cobra game, because it's only two pages.
That is elegance in design.
That's fantastic, because like sometimes people send us it's like 60 pages. We're like, oh my god, dude, like we have lives. Like, come on, we have a week.
Yeah, I accidentally did that because I didn't realize the book was so big because no one told me how many collaborators there were on it. Like, my bit was 15 pages, I'm sorry.
Just review that, please.
Yes.
So, do you want to start off with our story, or do you want one of us to?
Why don't you have one of you guys do it, and I will tell you stories later.
All right, so
I have
well.
Many.
All right.
I want to start with mine because I'm really excited about it. So I've been working on this Warhammer 40K D&D 5e hack.
Okay.
I know what everyone's thinking. You're thinking, heresy. But first let me start. I got to work on one of the actual Warhammer 40K RPGs. It was awesome. I got to work at Tome of Decay for Black Crusade. So I have a little bit of, like, you know, ground to stand on. And it's a great way to introduce people to the game when you may not have immediate access to 5 copies of Death Watch and the time and resources to buy and read all that, right? Like, you might need to sell your group on it first, in which case, come play my hack. I have a Star Wars hack for D&D 5e exactly for that purpose. I want you to go play the D20 Star Wars. I thought that was the best version, but that's neither here nor there. So
I did Dune for Pathfinder, which was fun.
Yeah, like, it could be a really good time. And everybody's already familiar with the rules, so they're very ready to grasp everything, and it's not nearly as awkward as when you, like, the first game of the new system whenever you're playing hack.
Oh yeah,
it's way easier to get into it. Yeah, so I've been working on it a hell of a long time. Oh, not a hell of a long time, that's not true. Hell of a long time in mic time, which is like 6 weeks.
I would say a week.
So yeah, 6 weeks of mic time is like a year. But I have all the races and the equipment and all the class archetypes. So you can play, like, pretty much everything. The playtesting party for group one was Ghost Killa.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Ghost Killa. Ghost Killa?
No, Ghost Killa.
Okay.
Ghost Killa. Completely different.
Me driving the vehicles. But yeah, he was like an orc scout that got that thought that they were ambushing these humans, but turned out it was an inquisitorial team, and they decided to save this one because they found out he was really psyker. Like, he had the psyker gene.
Oh, Jesus.
So, like, they've filled him with implants and stuff, and they have him walk around with a device that disguises him as an Ogryn.
No heresy there whatsoever.
Oh, well, I mean, they were part of... Okay, I should start. They are... they were playing agents of Inquisitor Xynthia of the Ordo Xenos. So, like, she is allowed to have an alien enslaved to her because she's Inquisitor of the Ordo Xenos. Like, that's one thing they do.
So heresy.
Not terribly commonly, but yeah, it's a thing they can get away with. And one of them was like a junior inquisitor, He was the archetype for Warlock. The Orc was a Ranger. There was a Vindicare Sniper. So, mm-hmm. like, from the Assassinorum.
Yep.
He was the shooty kind of sniper. And that was a Rogue archetype. And then, what's the last one? Inquisitor? Orc? Oh, that's right. A Pariah. An Imperial hero medic who is a Pariah. So, like, the Warp just can't touch her, and everybody hates her.
Oh, yeah.
As a matter of course.
Right.
So...
Oh my god, I have to tell my 40k story at some point.
I tossed them on an aggro world, and I was like, you're supposed to find a Xenos artifact. They're searching the worlds in the sector they think they're going to find it in. You're just here to be thorough, you know? And then they slowly, like, unearthed a Tau cult in the town.
Weird.
Which was awesome. D&D 5e is really good for, like urban mystery stuff. It plays good for that. And then they had a combat with two Tau warriors, and I just pulled stats out of the 29M Wasteland book. So I used the Atomic Army Cadet and then the Techno Magic Adept, I think it is, the lowest level ones in each. And it worked great. It worked really good. They, like, came into this meeting in the sewers, and, like, immediately the Orc just, like, charged in after the Vindicare Sniper started popping people. So one of the Tau started counter-sniping him. And I have rules in there for headshots and stuff. So whenever you hit an AC of, like, AC plus 2, I think, is a torso hit and causes, like, cumulative minus 1 on constitution checks, right?
Yeah,
and so on and so forth for, like, arms, legs. And then if you hit 8 plus, it's a headshot. And you just do maximum damage. So, like, they kept popping people with headshots and getting popped by headshots. Because, like, the sniper had some good rolls.
But that's what happens, though, like, in, like, Dark Heresy, too, because you invert your 2d10.
Exactly. Like,
God, I love the critical hit charts. They had that thing where it was like, they had a thing, what was it? With a plasma weapon.
You see, like, a silhouette of the guy, and then, like, depending on what your percentile roll is, you hit the head, the leg, the torso, etc. It's a really good hit system.
There
it's
actually
one of the best parts.
There's this one descriptor that always stood out to me. It was, like, I think it's if you hit their head or their chest. I forget what it was. It was like, it shakes, gets superheated, and explodes like an overripe watermelon.
I just remember that line. Charts, there were specific, like, critical maximum wounds you could do for each one, and it changed depending on what weapon you had, because Warhammer K's focus is largely on weaponry.
Yeah.
I pulled some of that away for the hack, because, you know, you want to keep a hack simple.
Yeah.
You want it to be, you know, easy to grasp. You still get them, and bolters are awesome, but, yeah, it's not quite the same thing. So, yeah, then they flee down a back tunnel, and then, like, they leave the counter-sniper there to, like, hold them off. And the Orc just, like, tries to cram his way, because they're large-sized, into a 5-foot tunnel that's, like, 15 feet long to, like, slash at this thing with his chain axe. Or chain wrench, I'm sorry, chain wrench.
Of course. And, as you have.
Then he, like, hits his self-destruct thing, and the Orc is just like, whatever, I don't care, I'm Orc Ghost, can I hit? And it explodes, but the Orcs are super durable, because in 40k, Orcs are, like, a fungus that becomes these walking, talking humanoids, and they regenerate super well, so he just kept getting up even after the explosion. And then they're, like, traveling after, like, one of the dudes, because he just picked up a random guy in the market, and I always roll to give him the chance, because they could just find somebody who knows something. And of course I rolled a one. So, all right, yeah, he's fearful of you, and you make your insight roll. Yeah, you think he knows something. So then they figure out they're going to this, like, port town, and they start heading there, and the Tau head them off, and that's when I bring in the technologists. And they had, like, a running battle as, like, Ghost Killer, because the driver, he's, like, driving the truck. And then Invictus is in the back with his sniper rifle and the Medicaid, and the Inquisitor's in the cap. And they almost got run off the road. Invictus ended up dying. And, I don't know. It was really good. It went way, way better than I thought it was going to go. I thought it was going to be clunky. I was really worried that the Orc was going to be way too overpowered and overshadow the other characters. And I don't know. I mean, I found stuff to fix. But, flew super well. And, I don't know, I was just really happy. Spend time working on something, and you're not really sure if it's going to play or not, and then when it clicks, it's, fuck yeah.
But you were saying, Jax?
Huh? I'm sorry. I just
thought you were going to say something in the middle there.
No. I was just making noises of approval.
Ah.
Don't worry about it.
So, you mentioned working on LARPs. I have been doing it since I was about 15, and about... way more than three, about 6 systems, but my favorite one's back in Connecticut, and so this is Val the Fiend Elf and the Giant. So we learned something about how the interaction between mechanics and live action do not always line up.
Yep.
So we had a thing. The game Mythical Journey is a great game. Very high quality costume. Single chapter. Great. Light as touch. Point building system built with a tool online. It's amazing. Excuse me. And so anyway, we had just kind of like the last big plot took 10 years to do ended. And we all started new characters. And I had a bunch of brownie points, extra points, so I could play a unique race. I decided to play a fiend elf. Everybody in the world hates fiend elves. Literally the first event, I was killed 4 times in one night. Mind you, I normally get killed maybe once in an event if I'm unlucky. I get killed 4 times in one night by players, and the NPCs actually took pity on me. They left my corpse and said sorry. I actually got tossed next to a trash can. Limbed and tossed next to a trash can. This isn't a great 4-H cut. It was amazing role-playing. And I was on the first name basis with Fate. When you died, you went to Fate in this creepy tavern, this creepy little shed, and he drew from a card. I didn't have any penalties, actually. He's like, get the fuck back there. I don't want to see you in here again tonight. All right, sir. But Val was this really arrogant, like, noble-born, like, fiend elf, and he was a Tirithian, god damn it. And he was loud and proud that he was a sorcerer, which is, like, super evil, but there were no laws against it, technically. And everyone had the greatest time. I got, like, we had a Pels post-event letters. Everyone was like, that fucking fiend elf! So, there's a spell called Pain. We use the birdseed packets to deliver them. Because if you're on a 4-H site, they had to be able to, what's the phrase? Decompose really easily. So, anyway, I only have a few spells in event, and Sunday is always the big battle game. It's Friday night, Saturday all day, and Sunday till the afternoon. And we get to the big battle, and in the previous session, Pain had worked differently. Pain was you could take no actions except for screaming in place for 10 seconds. It was Pain 10 seconds, and you throw it. So this one had the change of you had to go down to both knuckles or palms and one knee. And so you could pop down and pop back up if you were really, like, agile in real life. But generally it was, like, you know, it was pretty, you know, debilitating. So the final battle is there. And I've been getting shit all weekend. And the trolls are attacking. Now, we actually had stilts in the game. So this troll comes lumbering up. And Lil Val, sitting there smug as shit. That was his thing. He was just sitting there like... He was looking at him like this. He had a book open in one hand, had a dagger this big in the other, and all these guys had just been, like, corpses around this thing. He walks up, looks at him like, yeah, yeah. And this is like 17 or 18-year-old me, like, maximum ego just playing through this character. Through darkness causes you pain! And I hit it. And then the dawning on the face behind the guy's mask was great because he realized he had to go down to one knee in both hands while on stilts.
Oh no.
And could do nothing in the meantime. So I proceeded to stab the shit out of him continuously, rip his head off, throw it on the ground, go, and just sit there like that. And everybody starts cheering for the crazy fiend elf who was ballsy enough to walk up to the giant who just looked at him like a meal. And he's just like, that's right. That's right. I bowed, took his head, brought it to the king or the noble who was there, threw it at his feet, and walked away. So remember, mechanics do not always... They sound great. They don't always translate to live-action games.
I got some questions here.
Yeah.
So, all right. The online tool thing sounds awesome. That's a great way to regulate character creation because, like, I know a lot of the problems with that is, like, you spend so much time looking over the sheet making sure nobody's being, like, fucking insane.
One of the owners is a web developer, so he made the tool.
Yeah, no, that's smart. That's like A+. How big were the stilts? Like, were they just like up?
They were variable. The BBEG of the previous time period, Chikani, had like serious like 3-4 foot stilts. The funny thing about it was, because he wore a garb that made him look like his legs were much farther down than they actually were. His torso was actually his junk. So he had to put armor over that.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Those stilts, though, were only about a foot tall. They were kind of like the like the boot stilt ones.
That's yeah, pretty dope. That's dope.
And they would send those guys out with like handlers around them, so they wouldn't like. But the guy who played Chicani, the God Slayer, he could run in them, and he had the ability to deliver Final Death, which is just rip your character sheet up, you're done. And one guy screwed him over with some artifact thing that was like the big point of the event, and then bolted, and Chicani bolted off after him, and the guy was big in real life too. He's like taller than me in real life, and Chicani took off after this guy around the entire 4-H campsite, and he didn't die. Okay. The guy didn't die, if I remember correctly. He just was like he evaded him eventually, but man, it was great. Yeah, Val eventually. That was Valimo Jean-Luc Cacthrine. He ended up eventually turning to the light side, forsaking all fiendish magic, becoming basically a cleric of the light deity, despite his ego. And because I had to move out to Arizona, he got thrown into discord by the fiends after betraying them. And that's another one. He reported all the fiend elf things to and the sorcery things to the town guard that he was assigned to be on as a penalty for something. And they didn't tell the person running the plot.
Oh.
And Val had the problem of he reported it, and I'm sitting out of game waiting for the module room to open, the module building. It's like a horse shed, kind of. And they see all the good-aligned paladin-y players prepping in another area, and out of the game they're like, holy shit, I've been working for like 3 months for this, man. You can't screw this over. What happened? Why are they there? Who ratted on us? Oh my god! I'm gonna fucking kill that guy! And he's really pissed, and I'm sitting there like,
hoot, doot, doot.
No idea who! Oh my god! And they got up there, and all of them got killed and arrested for sorcery. And I got arrested too, and then was let go. But out of game, afterwards, the guy's like, that must have been the hardest thing in the world for you. I'm sorry I was saying all that mean shit. I don't mean it. Come here, give me a hug. That was really well role-played. And I'm like, I know. I had to do it for 3 months and betray you all. I'm so sorry. I love you guys. But, yeah, that is Valimo Jean-Luc Cacrine. He is currently residing in Discord, assumedly being tortured by fiends for all existence. You know, as it happens.
Good times. Yeah. Like you do. Yeah.
So, Savannah, what do you got for us today?
I think that I am very proud of my personal accomplishment of playing a World of Darkness mortal character who is completely and utterly self-centered, but is not a dick.
That's a challenge right there.
That is a challenge. I enjoy playing self-centered dicks, but this time I'm like, no, not gonna do it. So he's like a 23-year-old actor dude, and he is completely like solid in his assurance that he is the most beautiful person ever. And,
is this warranted, you know, though?
He does have a 5 presence.
Okay, so decent.
So, yeah. I mean, in World of Darkness terms, that's max for a mortal. Yep. So, but anyway, so he's just accepted his fate as the most beautiful person. And, you know, he's just a gift. His very presence is, you know, a boon to everyone around him. But he's actually, like, a nice guy.
Except for
he's
that
just
delusion.
A dork.
I love it.
What's that?
Oh, I said, except for that small delusion that he is God's gift to everyone.
Right. Yeah, and everyone just clearly kind of lets him go on with it because, you know, he is very pretty. So.
Very, very pretty.
I also like the fact that he's very flirty and has to get, like, everyone's number and da-da-da. however, he is specifically ace. And so for him, it's just like, yeah, it's just the flirting, and he is self-aware enough that his primary love is himself, that he also doesn't want to really get into an involved romantic relationship because he could never give his partner, you know, what they deserve because he's giving him what he deserves.
Clearly.
So
I can make some rather raunchy comments.
He's a flirty, beautiful person who's actually made of like snowflakes and rose petals because the fairies stole him away in like the 3rd game and replaced him with a fetch.
That is amazing.
Yep. He once opened a portal to a different dimension by looking smolderingly into a bird bath and willing it to happen. And what actually happened is that he was a fetch, and he had, you know, since he passed beyond the veil, he could mess with that. But what he thinks happens is that the world thinks that he is so gorgeous, it just, you know, capitulates. And in our most recent game, we basically picked up a couple low-level, like, mage spheres.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And so Zane got mind, so in theory, he can read people's minds. And this could be a really...
How does Fetch have a soul for an avatar to attach to?
It's not mage in the avatar sense. It's in the, like, here you were given a magic item sense.
Okay.
But no, that is a very good point. The other Zane is actually living in Colorado. They wanted to live as twins once they got the other Zane's body back, but they couldn't. So they both live in states where weed is legal. That was their goal.
Good.
But anyway, so he acquired mind reading powers, and in theory, he, you know, this could be really disruptive and destructive and evil. Except Zane doesn't care what other people are thinking, because he knows they think he's gorgeous. And he's like, well, I don't care what they're thinking.
If they're not thinking that, they're lying.
Exactly. It's like, I walked into a room, they're thinking about me.
Obviously.
So yes, that is my success story of the self-absorbed person who's not a jerk.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Jax?
Okay, so this one is a little old, but it's one of my favorite stories. So I played in a homebrew system with some friends of mine, and it was an alternate history 1930s, where the U.S. was divided into different countries. The South hadn't won the Civil War necessarily, but the country had stayed split.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also, like, an Iroquois nation, and
that's cool.
California was its own thing, and it was really great.
Texas, too?
Texas, too? Yeah. And my character was, because all of our characters were the children of some, like, super wealthy family. Like, we had a Morgan, like a J.P. Morgan.
Oh, wow.
But we had one of the Costellos, the Costello crime family. My character was Amelia Cunard. She was the daughter of the Cunard Shipping Lines, a.k.a. the people who created the Titanic, because White Star was a subsidiary of Cunard. And I didn't discover until Game 3 that my character had Asperger syndrome.
Oh, wow.
I was really sort of trying to work with this character, and she really revealed herself as someone who had way too much empathy and so sort of buried it and had a very deadpan outlook on the world and had areas of special interest that she was, like, super hyper-focused on and was the best at, like, technical stuff. So... this became an issue because I had talked to the GM... an issue in a good way.
Okay.
This became an issue because I had talked to the GM at the beginning of the game, and I'm like, look, I'm having issues with my upbringing, like, out of game, because this is when I'd started therapy. So, can you make my character's mom emotionally abusive? Because I want to be able to deal with that in a safe context. And people who know me know I am all about low-consequence gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should be able to experience stuff in a realistic but low-consequence environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you should be able to experience emotion, you should be able to experience, you know, the doing of things in a consent-heavy, low-consequence environment. So we had these interactions with her mother, and her mother was just the worst. The worst, like, every stereotype of the New York socialite you can think of.
Oh no.
Just the worst. And my poor little character had no idea what the hell was going on, and, like, was like, why doesn't my mom love me? But we later found out that my character's mom wasn't actually a New York socialite. She was a 200-year-old witch who had had my character as a child in order to take her body once she was at an acceptable age.
That's not creepy.
So when my character was 18, her mom died in a tragic boating accident, quote unquote. And then her mom tried to possess her. So we had this whole scene where we were banishing my mom's spirit, and like I was like, you need to, because my character was the best exorcist in the group, and this was a huge problem because this was a very personal thing for her.
Yeah.
So like I was like, I need you guys to yell mean stuff at her while I'm exorcising her. And one of them, the Morgan, actually was like, your style reeks of nouveau riche. Oh, bird. Yeah, your daughter is a better witch than you will ever be, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And one of the characters' grandparents was a floromancer. So when the funeral happened, it was this big, you know, social affair, and it was in all the papers, and we went to the funeral, and by this time we had learned, like, a lot of symbolism and green magic, so we knew how to read, you know, the language of the flowers, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Flowers. Mm-hmm. So we go there, and, like, there's these beautiful flower arrangements full of, like, roses and, you know, datura and nightshade, and essentially all I'm saying is, die, bitch.
That's beautiful.
Good.
And the floromancer, who was one of our character's grandparents, came to the wedding. She sort of nudges my character, because she'd met her briefly. Nudges my character, and she went, oh, it's nice to see your mother died like she lived, surrounded by passive-aggressive flower arrangements.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So... That's my story. Amelia Cunard was one of four female-identified characters and two male-identified characters in this game, and it was great because it wound up being one of the female-identified characters was the best fencer in the group. One of the female-identified characters was the richest. One of them was the best at intrigue, and one of them was the best exorcist.
So it was like 1930s A-team.
Love
yeah, it. And the two dude characters were the scholarship student who turned out to be essentially the socialite, because he was the best at talking to people, and the tiny, scrappy son of the Bell family, who, you know, had the telephone fortune, who all he really wanted to do was play music for pretty girls. And he was like our damsel in distress all the time. Like, he kept getting kidnapped by people or kept getting distracted and wandering off into dangerous areas or almost falling off boats.
That sounds awesome.
We had to keep rescuing him.
I love when characters, like, make their own adventures like that.
Yeah. One of the best lines from early in the game was this running joke we had where we were talking... the Morgan was talking to her dad, J.P. Morgan III, on the phone, and she was trying to convince him to fund a girls' fencing team for the school, because other schools had girls' fencing teams, and some of our characters wanted to learn how to fence, but, you know, our school didn't have a girls' fencing team. And he's like, I don't know, and she's like, but Daddy, we can't go to the Olympics without a fencing team. And he just goes, what do you mean they're not training you for the Olympics?
So
just became a running joke of, what do you mean they're not training you for the Olympics?
So, I'm a SCA historical fencer, and we just opened up a new peerage, which is like the highest thing you can get in the SCA.
Mm-hmm.
And for rapier... In our kingdom, one-third of the... There were three founding members of the peerages. And one of them was one, Her Grace Elzbieta. And one of the cool things is... There have been events where it's been just about 50-50 male-female. Or at least male-identifying,
awesome.
Female-identifying. And I've gotten my butt kicked more times than I can count. When someone goes, oh, it's a man's thing. Do I always gotta go...
Kill him!
See this wonderful woman over here? Yeah, she's kind of a small, petite woman, very pretty.
Ooh, those are the most dangerous rapier fencers, because they will get under and up.
I go, that is Her Grace Elzbieta. She has been queen, I think, 6 times now.
Wow.
She has been the general of our army multiple times. She has kicked my butt more times than I have any right to claim that she has kicked my butt. And she will teach you everything, and she's still an awesome person. So don't you ever go thinking about that, you know what I mean? There's just so many of them. Lady Perrin, or she's Doña Perrin, sorry. Juliana, all of them are just amazing people. And it's wonderful because there's a lot more of that in the fencing side than the hard suit side, the armor combat side. I don't know, I think it's brilliant.
I was explaining, I remember we were in the car yesterday driving to, because my wife just bought me a bunch of shoes. It was awesome. I got 2 pairs of shoes at once, which is extraordinary for me because I never do that.
I saw that. I was like, are those two?
2 pairs. Wow. I know. It's very out of character. She was thrilled. And we got them like super cheap. They were 35 each. And we walked out of there. She got a pair of shoes for herself. It was $20 a pop.
Oh, so, wow. Like,
and then, those running shoes, they had like a, I never realized they're like, it's like a sock on the top almost.
Yeah.
So I'm actually kind of stoked about using them. But, yeah, we were talking about like the gender differences and stuff. And when you guys were in school, did you do like a, you pick up like a chair or something, and like only the girls can do it a certain way because you have a lower center of gravity?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Chairs? That was a thing.
So
you did not do, so Scott, you know what I'm talking about?
Well, the way I learned it was from martial arts, actually, but it had more to do with body type than male, female, but most of the time it worked with that.
Yeah. So you guys have like a lower center of gravity, which is why you're also a better gymnast, and why dudes can't do the, is it parallel or unparallel bars?
I don't remember.
But there's one gymnastics event parallel bars. Yeah. So.
Well,
yeah.
It came up
in. I was like, that's weird. Like, I would know that shit.
It came up in martial arts.
I would know I want to, like, I'm better at grappling and shit. Like, I'd be on top of that.
It came up in our martial arts a bunch because we were doing a lot of grappling, and there's this woman who is awesome. It was cool. She was grappling while pregnant too. She still kicked all of her butts.
I remember there was a chick who could kick like she nobody could kick as high as her. She could like straight up take out shit on the ceiling. It was crazy.
But she had a great center. She had great control of her center of gravity. This one other guy had a body type similar to hers, and he had the same techniques. It was interesting. It's more body type than it is gender difference. It's just that it skews in one way how you budget biologically, or I don't know.
Yeah, I figured it had to be tied to age at some point, because like there's a because I remember doing it in, like, middle school, and that was just before everyone starts hitting their growth spurts. But
I missed that short period of time where I was like 2 inches taller than all the male people in school.
I forget when mine started. I think it started because I remember having ostrich slaughters in my knees. It sucked.
All right, so do you want to move on to the next section?
Yeah, let's talk about stuff that we're working on.
So anyone who wants to jump on it first?
I'll talk about Hyperscore Marvel.
Cool.
So I took last week off because I finally got Temple of Elemental Evil working on my computer. I finally hit a point where I'm happy leaving it alone for a while. I'm going to use it as like a reward for when I finish something big. But I had to make Daredevil. Somebody wanted Daredevil and Pathfinder, which turned out to be immensely difficult because Daredevil can sense like fucking everything.
Yep.
Like he can sense radiation and radio waves. And
he's really easy to make
and like everything except for actually seeing something. And getting all that into a Pathfinder build was like, I mean, I managed to do it. And he's like definitely like top tier Daredevil, like because he's CR18, so it's not going any higher than that. Yeah, like he's up there, which I felt was all right because he's kind of underrated for just being in Hell's Kitchen because like I can sense fucking everything, except for magic, incidentally. So yeah, no detect magic on Daredevil. Detect everything else, but yeah, so I do a series on my I do a series on my website where I take Marvel characters and I make them in Pathfinder using the Hyperscore system, which is itself a hack to take Pathfinder and make it into like a superhero cyberpunk thing. And it uses the Hyperscore system, which is something Savannah also worked on. where you oh yeah, you playtested too. Like we talked about that last. Oh, should we talk about the triple ones?
I feel like this will be the third podcast that we brought up the triple ones. I'm always happy to talk about it, Mike. I found the picture yesterday.
All right. Oh, dude, could you send it to Scott?
Yes, I will totally do that because. Oh,
okay, so this is like one of the playtesting games for HyperScore because we did playtest it a lot because it was complicated, and they are like. They're like taking revenge on the Mr. Gray that originally hired them and like double crossed them, and they've chased
them
all the way.
He just paid us; it would've been fine.
Yeah, but he didn't, and you guys took it personally and decided to get revenge. Like they went to Canada, so they crossed borders. They got themselves like a super van, which they painted like what was it? Like a giant.
It was like obnoxious blue and orange, and it said like "Cripple Van" on the side.
Wow.
Because you had Cripple Beast with you.
Because Cripple Beast is the handle of one of our former Murder Ball players.
Yes.
Murder Ball,
yes,
the best sport.
Murder Ball player.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the only sport in HyperCore 29 now. But, yeah, so they're in there and they're like, they chase him down and they're fighting him. He's got the upper hand. And he goes to, like, kill Savannah's character.
Because the tank was almost dead and she used a hero point. Scott, I sent you the picture. It's labeled
it's
best
screen.
Hero point. I used, I sent it via Facebook.
No, it's already on the screen. Don't worry
about
it. Awesome. It's floating around the screen.
I used the hero point to pour all of my healing spells for the day into the tank and then like became nauseated and staggered or something. Oh.
Yeah.
It was bad. But anyway, continue, Mike. This is my favorite part.
So then he goes to like roll and he's got this I forget what he exactly called it.
Yes.
It's basically a laser razor whip thing. Roll badly.
Monofilament.
Was it monofilament? Straight up monofilament? Okay. I think it was monowire. It's monofilament there. It's Shadowruns.
Yeah.
But anyway. Effectively a monofilament. If you ever saw Johnny Mnemonic, the thing that the guy is using to cut people up, that. And if you roll really badly, you attack yourself.
Yep.
And you can, like, hack off your own limbs. He rolls 3 ones at the same time. And the probability of doing that is astronomical. I'm just like, all right, well, he cuts himself in half, and it's a mess. It's a terrible mess.
Terrible.
To be fair, I think he like cut off like a chunk his arm and a chunk of his torso because he ran after us.
Yeah, he did try to go after
GTFO'd.
He has crazy regeneration and stuff. They are not to be fucked with, the Mr. Grays and Mrs. Grays. But you did. You fucked with them and you lived to tell the tale.
And we stole Samoji.
Mm-hmm.
Because screw those people.
Oh, that was a good game. But yeah, so you use the HyperScore system, you make superheroes, it's all on my website. I'm up to 25 characters as of Saturday, which is when Daredevil posts. It's like Emma Frost, the Infinity Gauntlet, Hulk, Iron Man, Spider-Man, the Venom symbiote. There's a shitload of them. It's great.
Mike, I thought that was a mysterious thing with a weird outline. No one could possibly tell who you were talking about on your Facebook. Did you just spoil that here?
Oh,
I've done that for a couple of them. One of the, I think Cable lasted the longest before somebody was like, that's Cable. I was like, all right.
To be fair, Cable has lots of like designs, though.
He does. That was why he lasted so long.
So, Jax, what are you working on now? That you can talk about.
I have several things I'm working on. I am working on Chill 3rd Edition with Growling Door Games, which I'm super excited about. because I'm writing weird possessive undead. Not like undead who possess you, but undead who are possessive.
Hmm.
Which I'm excited about. I recently finished.
So wait, like, are they just like hoarders or
like really?
No, they're like zombies who are possessive of people.
Ah.
Like they possessively protect or stalk someone or whatever.
Wonderful.
Oh, okay. All right.
I
want zombie hoarders.
I've done a couple of things with Onyx Path this year, which I'm super excited about. I got to work on Vampire and Changeling and Demon and Exalted. And I got to write a bunch of stuff for all of those lines, and that was really fun. And I actually just opened a Patreon today.
Cool.
for me to put stories that I have nowhere else, because a lot of times I have really weird and vivid dreams, and I'm like, I want to write this in a story, but this makes no sense. This makes no sense in any game fiction I have ever written.
Yep.
What do I do with that?
I have a workspace doc for that, so I hear you.
Yeah. Pelly apparently agrees.
Pelly is adorable, by the way.
I'm very excited about Pelly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she clearly asks the hard-hitting questions.
Yep.
Yeesh. My bird was never that good.
To be fair, Pelly's 12, and it's only within the past, like, 2 years that she's been personable.
Yeah.
Because she had a cage mate, and they bonded to each other more than me, and they were scared of, like, literally everything.
Yeah.
But it turns out that when he passed away, that it turns out that he'd been bullying her, and so now she's really come out of her shell.
Uh-huh. Oh, so to speak.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, I used to have a bird. His name was Pi, but sadly I could not give him the attention or love he needed, so I gave him to a lovely lady in Maryland, and she and her son and her green tea conure are attempting to cause him to be more personable.
Oh. I mean, if Pelly can do it, I'm sure Pi can do it.
Yeah, he's a screamer.
She finally lets me scritch her. It's so exciting. 12 years, it's only in the past, like, 3 months.
Aw.
No, Pi would let me scritch him, but he yells a lot.
Well, he is a sunny.
Yeah, he's a sunny, so they yell. And he didn't want to talk, but he hated my sister. Like, she would come into the room and he would make the attack motions. Like, thump on his cage and be like, ah! And she'd yell at him. Pi doesn't like it when people yell. So he'd yell back, and then she'd yell at him for yelling at her, and then it would just continue the cycle. And whenever he was out and he heard her, he would immediately go and attack her.
It's a vicious cycle, yelling at birds. They're like, oh, you're screaming? I can do that better.
Yeah, I'm better at the scream.
It's like when my dog barks at something, my wife goes, Kirk, be quiet! And I'm always like, no, here's how you have to do it. Hey, buddy, it's okay. I know. There's mean noises out there. And he looks at me like, oh, I don't have to bark at it. That's right. Hey,
yeah.
You were not barking? Why aren't you barking?
Right.
Get it.
Yep.
So, you working on anything else, or can I take over for a sec?
I mean, the other thing I'm currently working on is I'm, currently in the early stages of working on a game about a monastery.
Yeah.
And having two different factions, essentially a faction of monks and a faction of pilgrims. And the monks have a very ritualized existence, and the pilgrims are there to, like, not knowingly. I mean, in outside of the game fiction, yes, but in the game fiction, they're not there to knowingly disrupt the lives of the monks. They're just making the pilgrimage.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I want to sort of play with that tension.
I like it.
And it's in its very, very early stages, so I'm not sure what I'm doing with it yet, but we'll get there.
So, yeah, I am working on something. You guys know about our alternate path line. We take a bunch of we examine one part of a Pathfinder, and we put out advanced rules made for more advanced players. We don't have a good name for this book yet. We know what it's about, but we don't have a really good name for it. Currently, it's called Alternate Path Fight Smarter. it kind of focuses on characters who specialize not in the I hit things with a linear damage modifier, but the creative fighters, the rangers, the rogues, the, you know what I mean? The ones who have more combat tricks, like gunslingers have their deeds and everything. In the book itself, we actually have, in the past we've done sections with alternate subsystems and rules and everything. We have like 20 pages, Google Docs, I don't know the word count on it, of rules, of alternate rules and stuff. We talk about, new ways to use combat maneuvers, expanding, immediate reactions to like standard actions and stuff, and a bunch of ways for implementation and everything. We talk about like wall jumping and like, I don't know, crazy stuff like that, how to run along walls, and really simple, we have a really simple grappling set rule. We also kind of examine classes. You guys know what the Tippyverse is?
Mm-mm.
That sounds familiar.
So the Tippyverse was this guy, Tippy, who wrote a thing on, I think it was EN World way back when. It was basically, what if magic worked rules as written? How would it impact the actual world and how things work? So he starts talking about, like, how cities would be, like, circular and insular so that when... Because armies could teleport, basically, and you could only protect certain areas with, like, anti-magic. And I know it's really interesting stuff if you guys have a chance to look at it. But we wrote them kind of Tippyverse style, the classes. So it's like, what does a scout look like in a world where magic is common? Oh, there's my corgi. Hi, Kirk. What's up, buddy?
Flop.
Yeah, he is. He used to be really, like, bouncing off the walls 24/7. Actually, he was doing that earlier. He's just not right now. We did a scout that's all about, like, how would a scout actually work in a world where magic, like, high magic setting, like a sapper harrier thing. There's a bunch of things in there. It's a real interesting book. We're really psyched to be kind of drawing on the mechanical side of things more. We did a bit with Altpath Marshall, but we're really going heavy on this. New uses for combat skills, dozens of new feats. I don't know. It's going to be a party. Everyone's invited. I don't know when that's coming out. The monster book's coming out. The monstrous anthropomorphic classic monsters book is coming out this week, I think. So I just got Jacob Blackman's art back, and I was formatting it on Saturday, actually. I have to get back to that tonight, probably. But, yeah, that's what I'm working on. I'm really pumped about that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Playtest is going great. Savannah, what do you got on your plate?
I haven't actually picked up anything new between this Wednesday and last Wednesday, so...
That's fine.
You could turn in your archetype stuff for Book of Resolve Darkness or a few spells, maybe?
That is true. Well, I haven't picked up anything new because I'm wrapping up Tim Hitchcock's Mind Tyrants of the Merciless Moons.
Ooh, okay.
So I should have that wrapped up by Monday, and then I will do my archetypes.
Yes.
Because... As it turns out, when an author does, so, you know, as an FYI for all aspiring freelancers, if someone gives you a style guide, please format everything accordingly, and your editor will like you more.
I actually made a free style guide for the David Silver Games because of that.
When we first started, we didn't have a style guide.
People who don't use a style guide really piss me off.
Yeah, like because go ahead.
I, as a new freelancer for Onyx Path, read through that fucking style guide, had an anxiety attack about style guide, managed to format my LibreOffice so it would accept the special styles that we use, and then, you know, made sure everything was formatted perfectly, and there are still fucking people in different... I don't need to use the style guide, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yep, because it screws up the layout, and it's just...
Yeah.
It adds at least 10 to 20% extra time for the editor.
Totally.
And that's time that they could be spending making your stuff look better.
Yep.
So, like, you're not doing yourself a favor. And speaking of using the style guide, why didn't you just, like, save as the file and then use that?
How do you mean?
Like, that's what I do when I get a style guide. I don't import anything.
I had to import it as a template for the office.
Oh, balls. That's
see, we're,
I found out in at least Word 2007, there's a way you can go in and, like, bring up two different documents. It's like, document A has these styles, and document B has these styles, and you can copy across.
Okay.
Which is really cool, so.
See, we're a little, different, because we use Google Docs for everything. So I just go, here are what you use to denote different things. This is the way we use style guides. Do not deviate. And we have our little document that we have with all the stuff. And because we collaborate in the same document, it's fun to watch people, like, go do something. I'm like, no, I'm the keeper of the goddamn style guide. I will go fix it while they're doing it. I'm like, you know this is H2, man. Don't you mess with me here.
One of the things I appreciate about working on Athera is that when authors send in their turnover, if it wasn't formatted right, they got it sent back.
Oh,
nice.
That's wonderful.
I felt bad. Someone had me freelance on something at one point, and they didn't send me the style guide till after I had already finished everything.
No.
Like, 2 months after I finished it.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I can go back and do this. You guys already paid me. I'm happy to go do it. I'll find time this week, I guess. And they're like, you know what? We're going to go ahead and add it. I'm like, thank God. Thank God. And they have an easy style guide. It just would have taken me like 3 hours to like go over everything.
Yeah.
Like going back and adding it is a lot harder than doing it while you're writing it.
Yeah, that's what tonight's to-do is reformatting.
Ooh.
Yes. But after that, I'm archetypes. Sorry, Book of Exalted Evil.
Exalted Darkness, which is the evil one.
Evil Darkness?
I like it.
Yeah, I actually just got one of the concepts back because I've been trickling art into you while I'm waiting for Legendary Games to get back to me because I sent them an art list and I was like, let me know if you have any stock art that fits this style and is this content and is so big. So it's going to take him a while to get back to me because there's like it's a wish list of like 100 some things. And then the rest that's not covered under that, I'll sift it through and then pick what Indy gets. So until then, I'm trickling her stuff I know he doesn't have. So it's like people chasing a Steel Equus, which is like a railroad train, and they've got like a car that they've supercharged using their like Wicked Souls. And they've I was trying to get Indy, so like I've asked her for something pretty difficult because she sent one where somebody's like chain whipping the driver, the conductor out. And I was like, okay, so can somebody be like chain whipping him out and then another person using him like a gangplank to get into it? Because like that sounds perfect for what I want. So yeah, I don't know. The concepts came in, they're pretty good so far.
So do you want to move into the fourth section here?
Yeah, we should.
So
there are new projects that are not ours, yeah.
Yeah. So I actually have one right now. I'm not sure. You guys have to have read Cyanide and Happiness, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Cyanide and Happiness, the game that they kickstarted, Joking Hazard, is finally out and in stores. Can go buy it. I mean, if you didn't back it, now you can go buy it. I don't know. I'm really pumped about it. It's you have to complete their comics. There's this game called Buffalo, but it's kind of like that. It's kind of like a little bit like Cards Against Humanity or something. It's fun. I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, each card is a different strip from the comic.
Yeah. You gotta arrange them and do your thing with it.
No, that's fun.
But yeah, I mean, it's out now, so go buy it. It's awesome. It's really weird. I'm trying to look at my camera, like, right here. But
really easy to find, too. It's jokinghazardgame.com, and yeah. I'm sure that your friendly local game store has it, so check out at the hobby shop first.
So, Jax, you got something?
Whoa, what?
Something cool that's come out that you did not work on but think is cool anyway.
Oh, wow. Gosh. What is something?
I got something, if you want a minute to think about it.
No, I got it. This isn't strictly a game supplement, but it is related to a game I played recently.
Yeah?
If you're familiar with New World Magiscola, which is the big blockbuster Harry Potter LARP.
No, I'm not.
Okay, so Learn LARP LLC does a huge blockbuster wizard school LARP every summer.
Oh, is that the one in the castle?
Yeah.
Okay, I have seen that one.
Well, there's the one in the castle, which is in Poland, but then there's an American group who are connected to that group who do one in the U.S. now.
Ah.
And this year, it happened at William & Mary, and right now, actually, they're doing a summer camp for younger kids at Swarthmore.
Adorable.
But the thing they actually recently funded on Kickstarter is the Cactus Cat. And this is actually a plushie of an ongoing running joke from the community.
Hmm.
But the plushie is actually super well made and can be used in universe as a creature.
That's pretty
and
cool. I love it.
It funded and it's awesome. But the best thing is, if you paid for a $40 cactus cat instead of a $25 cactus cat, you got a little collapsible shot glass because cactus cats like tequila and mezcal because they're cactus cats. Right. So it comes with a little collapsible shot glass that attaches to its collar.
I love it.
Now, if you got the $25 one, it didn't come with the shot glass, but it was super well made and it was wonderful, and I'm super excited for my cactus cat.
Funny thing is, we have a Mezcal Mister on one of our Nagual Mecha.
That's awesome.
In the fighting death badass spirit one is One of its variant ones has a mezcal mister, which literally intoxicates enemies in the field. Sorry, it's spiritual mezcal or something. I forget what it was. It's great. But, yeah, Mike, so what did you have?
It's the Book of the Righteous 5e from Grain Ronin.
Yeah? What's it about?
It's finally out and available. Oh, it's like a wide-ranging God's book for 5e.
Oh, cool. I read that. I read the summary of it.
Yeah. They ran the Kickstarter, I don't know, about a year ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get the PDF now, so the print should be available soon, and I'm sure it's good, because Green Runner makes good books.
That's true.
Yeah.
Hi, Joe. Joe character is awesome.
Savannah, what do you got for us?
I think my current favorite writing project is have you all seen the Cards Against Humanity For Her box?
Yes! We talked about it before, but it's still beautiful.
It's just like Cards Against Humanity, but it's in a pink box and for ladies, so it's $5 more.
Exactly. Yes. And I did check. I was wondering where the proceeds would go. If anyone was wondering, it is going to Emily's List.
Oh, very cool.
Nice.
Which, you know, for those who don't know, is in the name of getting pro-choice ladies into political positions.
Ah. I love it.
Yep.
So
that's all she wrote for me.
So yeah, the next section is Pathfinder and Starfinder news. Mike, we...
We start the section off with the document that somebody has been updating about all of the Starfinder releases. It's a Google document that is, I don't want to open it, but I'm going to go with 80 pages long.
Wow.
They were pretty comprehensive. Yeah. So if you want to know something about Starfinder, it's going to be in that Google document, so look there. And then third-party Reddit?
Yeah, so some guy opened a third-party Pathfinder Reddit. I don't know, it's kind of cool. I posted up on it, I messaged people on it, I don't know. It's
kinda
cool.
I feel like I'm surprised there wasn't one already.
You know, I'm sure there might have been something, but it like never caught on. I heard something about it, but this one is somewhat official. It's not super active. I think it's only got, let's see, like 60-something readers, and it's just starting out, though. It'd be kind of cool. I'm looking forward to it.
I subscribed.
Me too. I even posted. What did I post? I posted something about...
I posted as well.
I posted
the thing about the artists.
Oh, yeah. I responded to a thing or two. Oh, yeah. Was that the question about,
kind of arts.
Yeah. Do you buy stock? Do you do it? That was an interesting thing. Yeah, the question was something like, did you, what percent do you get stock? How much do you commission? Where do you commission it from? Et cetera, et cetera. And my answer was that we commission a bit. We have some people we work with. We're always willing to try new people. But we also have, I spend a lot of time looking through public domain stuff. I love the public domain. Not in a, like, ooh, greedy, in the, oh my God, collaboration is the intent of public domain. It is the point of copyright. It was to earn you a living on it in your lifetime and then release it so everyone can, all of mankind can benefit from it. And guess what? We're humankind here. We can benefit from this, you know?
That's not the best part about public domain.
I
the best
got
part
some
about
cool stuff.
Public domain is the suspension of disbelief.
Hmm.
Because when you see historical artwork that you register as being from the real world and it's presented in this different context, it makes it easier for you to accept that context.
I could see that.
That's why I use it for Mists of Akuma, and it totally fucking works.
I got
like
thousands of pieces of public domain that are as good as anything I commission. And I love it, but I do commission because, like Mike was saying, there's some pieces you're like, all right, so I need a half-orc in a JKD, or an orc in a Bruce Lee outfit going like this for the style, and, oh, by the way, I totally got that done. It is my favorite piece I've ever had, the orc in the Bruce Lee outfit. the Game of Death outfit.
An Indian dude working on, like, a giant robot suit that he wears.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding that like four other people have basically commissioned the same piece, and I was just like, really? Like, okay.
That seems fairly niche, but okay.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I mean, like, that's great, but like, yeah, like, what? All right.
Race books I always have the hardest time with because it's like, all right, so I wrote a new race. It is a winged manta person who does this thing, and they dress kind of like Samoan, and they have to have the, and I'm like, there's no way I'm ever going to find that. You know? So those are always commission heavy. We escape with a less budget than normal on this last one, but it'll be good. But yeah, that's the third party Reddit. Go check it out.
Cool.
5e stuff is up.
Pathfinder, Starfinder. No Direction is starting now, I think, on a Starfinder thingy with one of the Paizo people. I think Owen said he's going to be there, and he's the Starfinder lead now, lead developer. So watch that later or now. Whatever. Whatever's good.
No, quick, don't leave!
Yeah. D&D 5e news and speculation.
So yeah, there are a few things that came out recently. You guys know that they had the Tolkien stuff. They have a wilderness supplement they put out, which was kind of cool because it adds the Bjorn's house or whatever. Yeah, so you have his house. You got Misty.
It better have a hole in the hedge, is all
I know, right? They cover the Misty Mountains, like the shadows of it, not inside.
Do they have Tom Bombadil yet?
Not in this supplement. I don't know. I'm not following that too heavily, actually.
Like, what do they have against Tom Bombadil? Why?
I don't know, man. Oh, Tom Bombadil, king of
shadows. Such a crucial part, and they just...
Yeah.
It's sad. But yeah, the other thing is they had some Unearthed Arcana. It was from a few weeks ago.
These were revised, I think. Already came out. Yeah.
They got revised. They were actually came out like a week or two ago. We just didn't talk about them. Listen real quick, they had a druid, Circle of the Shepherd. It's kind of animal and fae stuff. It's kind of a Buffy kind of aura thing. The Cavalier does horse stuff. You get 4 superiority dice that you can use throughout the day. They get bigger in size. They start off at D8s and the D12s.
And they're horse-specific maneuvers as opposed to the Battlemasters.
Let's see, what else do they have? The Oath of Conquest from the Paladin, which is basically, it's not enough to kill evil. It is, you have to dominate, destroy, wreck, and totally obliterate evil to conquer it. They use a really interesting phrase, though. They said, they're sometimes called Hell Knights.
Oh.
I'm like...
Yeah, they're totally not from Chelix.
No, not at all. No. They're totally not lawful dick paladins. What are you talking about? They totally are. They have a fear aura. It's not actually really interesting setup, actually, as much as the concept warrants, I feel like. They had a celestial pack, basically good aligned patrons for warlocks. They expanded that a bit. I thought it was...
I remember looking at it and being like,
yeah. Yeah, it didn't do much for me. They had a bunch of other warlock, options for the Eldritch Invocations. I think of the back, like, 20%. I don't know.
I'm making fucking Ordos Inquisitors over here. I don't need the Ordos Arcana.
Yeah, the thing is, like, it feels like they're playing it really safe with them nowadays. It's like, look, we released this thing that should probably be released in, like, a drove of, like, 20 in a source book, maybe, you know?
What they're going to do with them eventually. I mean, the next book has a bunch of the... It's what it is. It's just Unearthed Arcana archetypes is a couple chapters of it, I think.
Yeah, but it feels like we should... Like, this is not, like, a big thing, like, oh my god, they put out, you know, celestial options. No!
Yeah, the Magic the Gathering Ankhmet thing was way bigger.
Oh yeah, that was so much cooler, too, with, like, gorgeous artwork.
I don't know why they don't do adventures for it. I really don't. Because they already have, like, all the art they could possibly require for it.
Are they not doing it specifically? Have they said they're not doing it?
Have you seen anything about Magic the Gathering D&D adventures? I haven't either. Like, why not?
You'd think it'd be a no-brainer, but...
Yeah, like, it's already done. Like,
And they own the same licenses. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're already merging them. I mean, like, they're specifically doing them as free products. So I think I have this suspicion there may be some legalese reason.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine what the fuck it would be.
Well, they might have the problem with the artwork where they've got a single-use thing, like you can only use it for a card game.
Oh, yeah, possibly. I bet you they lost some of the old files.
I mean, how many years has it been around? I'm sure they've lost something.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. Anyway. Other RPG news and business.
Tell us about these Systemac Eurasian Beavers, Scott.
This is just, like, a weird thing. I was looking over release schedules, and, like, 2/3 of the way down it, like, there's this random, like, entry called Systemic Eurasian Beavers. I'm like, what's a Systemic Eurasian Beaver? Well, it's for this game called, like, Dale of Merchants, and it's, like, something about anthropomorphic like merchants in a small town or something.
Okay.
And I just, but like the weird thing is they released three books, Merchants of Dale, or was there Dale of Merchants, Dale of Merchants 2, and Systemic Eurasian Beavers. One of these things is not like the other. I'm just like, all right, Systemic Eurasian Beavers. All right, that's what I want for Christmas, Dad. Get me it. So, Systemic Eurasian Beavers.
I want to see the artwork for this Systemic Eurasian Beavers.
It's not even, like, special. It's just, like, Systemic Eurasian Beavers.
They look just, like, straight up beavers? Or is this some, like, really subtle and bizarre racism? Or, like...
No, it's just, like, Systemic Eurasian Beavers. I don't know. Let me see. Board Game Geek has the cover.
That's what I'm saying. I want to see one of these beavers. Okay, no, it's a beaver.
There's like, yeah, there's like.
It just straight up looks like a beaver and like a. It looks like a Al Borland beaver.
Yeah, they're like they were like flannel. I think.
All right. That's just bizarre. Then
I know it was just like straight up bizarre. Like they have like all these like main source books and then the first like.
Oh, and I guess Eurasian
one?
Is the species. Okay, I see what's going on. All right.
I don't get it though, but it's just like the first.
Like an African swallow.
Yes.
Yeah.
How far can that fly? By the way.
African or European.
So on a more realistic note.
Yeah, so this I just saw this on Facebook while I was bopping around. Some guy named Tom Anders has finished a dice set of crazy dice. Like they're D3, D5, D7, D11, D13, D15, D16, D17, D18, D19, D22, D24, D26, D28, and D30. Some of those I do not think have been made yet.
Sorry, I had to get something for the segment.
Yeah, you have some of these, you said.
I've never seen a D17.
So yeah, I don't have all of those. I have... Yeah. I was at my friendly local game store like 5-6 years ago, Game Depot in Tempe. And they have these weird dice that look like this. You can't see them very well. But this is like a D18, I think. This is a D20... Two or so. Oh, D20. This is a D24. Was this one? Oh, by the way, I'm very proud. I have a D1. Look.
Is it a Mobius strip?
No, it's a sphere.
Ah. Oh.
It's actually from a Ramune bottle. But no, I have a I've lost some of them, but this is like a D. This one's a little lopsided, so I don't use it. I think this is a D9. Yeah, this is the D16, the little spindle one. But yeah, they had a bunch of them in here. I don't know, I just... D10 from it. But yeah, I had a bunch of those, so I was like, oh, that's cool, they're making, like, every one of them. Where's the D5, I think? I have a D5 in here.
Yeah. This look weird up until about D... The D9 looks pretty standard. D7 looks standard. And then everything after the 12 looks... like a 12 that gradually changes into a D20.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the D16.
That's so, like, specific. I'm not a dice collector, so whatever.
Neither am I. I just found it, and it was cheap. It was, like, $10 for the whole pack or something.
Alright, that's cheap, yeah.
I just kind of worry about the utility. Like, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh, I also keep a D2 in here. You ready? A penny.
Yeah.
Oh, the best drinking dice in the world.
Corvus
it has,
Belly is like. Oh, I'm sorry. What?
So I have this dice. I don't remember where I got it, but it has ounce, pint, cup, gallon, and quart on it for some reason. And all I can imagine is this is the best drinking game. All right, guys, we're playing with tequila. Roll 1d6. Oh, good. I gotta have drink a pint of tequila.
Alcohol poisoning.
Guys, I rolled a gallon. Get the stomach pump.
Yeah.
See, the only thing I could imagine is that you'd have to assign like a certain type of booze to a amount.
But even like, I don't know what you could drink a gallon of that wouldn't like kill you.
That's true. I mean,
even water. Like, oh my god.
Oh, maybe like homemade ginger ale that technically has an alcohol content.
There you go. I mean, I think that'd be really
disappointing. Drinking a gallon of it would not be enjoyable. You should not do this. Professional Goblins does not condone anyone drinking a gallon of anything in a setting. It's a bad idea.
Yes.
I gotta tell you right now, kind of a sad story. I actually had a guy who died of water intoxication, a friend of mine. So please do not do that. If you guys don't know, you can overhydrate. You can. It's a really rare thing to happen. You have to drink like more than a gallon like every hour. It's ridiculous, but water toxicity is a real thing. It's actually something that comes up more often than you think in Arizona, because people just keep drinking water because it's, you know, 112 and you're outside. He was actually outside exercising and he just kept drinking water and he passed away because of it.
Well,
but yeah, so please don't drink yourself to death by on our advice.
While drinking anything.
Yes.
On a lighter note, Corvus Belly is looking for a graphic designer. So if you are a graphic designer and want a job in the games industry, there is a link here, or if you know graphic designers, tell them. It's a full-time gig.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know where they're based. I'm looking at the website. I don't see it anywhere immediately.
Imagine at least part of it can be remote.
Probably to start. I think they might be somewhere in Spain or something. I don't know.
All right, so if you're in Spain and you want a job in the game industry, there you go.
I mean, if you're trying to get out of America and you want a job in the game industry, there you go. IDW Games has acquired the licenses for making Nickelodeon tabletop games.
I'm really looking forward to my SpongeBob, man.
The first
you
one
we're
doing, I think,
happen.
Is like a cafeteria food fight of some kind or something. I don't know.
Roll 1D.
I mean, that does open a lot of doors.
Yeah, like there's a lot of potential, and like I could definitely play a Rocko's Modern Life game. I think.
Oh my god, that'd be so surreal and wonderful.
I know, I know.
Did you guys see the trailers for those?
Which one?
Oh, we'll talk about another media then. Oh my god, don't worry. Continue on with your banal life until that section.
ESPN did some fucking commercial where they basically say that LARPing is stupid and not to do it and to play fantasy football instead.
Oh my god. I was so pissed about that. This is the second time.
Like, last week, they're like, Cammy's leotard is too revealing, which is insane. And they interfered with, like, a video game championship they were airing. And now, like, they've got a commercial. Like, has the adult nerd war started? Is this it?
So, as someone who's been, and Jack's back me up here, as someone who's been involved in this, the backlash from the community has been, like, overwhelming.
Yep.
We have, if you go to their comment section, every comment with, like, some of them have, like, over 1,000 likes or whatever, a few hundred at least, are just like, no, this is a positive thing. Lots of people explore different concepts through it. All of my friends do this. Thank God you're telling us to sit on our butts on a couch, you know, doing fantasy football instead of going outside and being social and interacting, and thanks for shaming us for a hobby that we do and we love. I'm not gonna flip off the camera right now, but I think everyone's just doing that little dance, you know.
I feel like they're starting to decide, like, okay, our stance is
toxic masculinity. That's our stance. Toxic masculinity.
Yeah,
good. Positive.
I mean, I can't say I'm shocked, but I am disappointed.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, like, someone pointed out that ESPN is doing esports stuff now, like we saw with Cammy. Mm-hmm. And they want to bash the nerd demographic? Like,
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand why, and so my assumption is that it's that they're just angry that, you know, the media isn't dominated by football all the time anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, now they have to have football on Thursday nights and Monday nights and Sundays and sometimes
Saturdays. Isn't Saturdays like college or something?
Yeah, like, I'm sorry that the demographics of the world are no longer to the liking of the 1950s male. Oh, God. Oh, God, help us.
And remember, guys,
fuck over it.
There's some image that says fantasy football. It's D&D for the guys who used to beat up the guys for playing D&D.
Yeah. The guy who runs my Call of Cthulhu game dabbled in playing fantasy football, and he's like, you know, it is very much like a D&D game. You pick your cohorts partially based on their stats, and you hope they go forward to victory. Like,
you gamble.
I Yeah, basically, like, it, I feel like it would be much less engaging, but, you know, yeah. You do you, folks. It's not pie, like, it's not zero-sum game.
Yeah. I don't know. It's irrational, so I, yeah. I don't know. It makes me angry. Moving on.
This is not Roll 20, Mike.
Oh, the quarterly stats came out, so basically the middle of last year to, excuse me, this spring. It's just like how many people are playing what games. D&D 5e still has the lead on Roll 20, followed by Pathfinder, and
really?
Then I think Savage Worlds or Shadowrun is running up at fourth, third and fourth. But yeah, you can check them out on EM World. They do quarterly reports. I'm not surprised by the lead. I think people are losing a little interest in Pathfinder because they're getting interested in Starfinder. So
makes sense.
We hope.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do it. Other media of interest.
So yeah, let's see. What do we got here?
The thing that's apparently Guardians. Going to make our lives not.
Okay, well, that'll be at the end of this. So I got to see the Russian movie Guardians. Not Guardians of the Galaxy, Guardians. You guys may have remembered it, or you guys may think of it because they had like that trailer with that cool dude who had like the two scythes on his back. He had his eyes turned white and he teleported around killing a bunch of dudes.
Russian
in cars.
Avengers.
Yeah, it's basically like Russia's answers to Avengers. Now, it was a huge budget. I think it was like a $5 million converted to US. It's like $5 million budget. And it looks like it. It has a big budget. It looks pretty. The effects are actually pretty decent. There are a few things that are a little awkward. Like, so I didn't have the best subs, by the way. So I won't speak to that, like the plot writing, but there's this really weird pacing. There's a werebear dude. He's pretty cool.
Of course there's a werebear dude.
Of course. He's the most Russian thing on the movie. And he just kind of like, he's entirely CGI and everyone else is like, they use their effects sparingly and he just looks really out of place sometimes, but seriously running around. Like at one point he goes full bear and he's he has a rage controlled AI chain gun on his back. And he jumps over these guys and he's jumping over mauling one person as the gun's pointing the other way, shooting out like other guys. I'm like, this is wonderful. I can't hate this movie. Like the plot is completely like, what? Who even? Like, I don't get what your plot is, but werebear with minigun mowing things down, and the effects are just too great. Like, it's too much fun not to watch. They totally.
How many
don't...
montages were there?
Oh, all of them. All of them were.
The Russians are the inventors of the montage.
They weren't so much montage as they don't really get pacing as well, because it was like that. You could basically what the movie was. Here's like 12 like set pieces. Here's like 12 like fight scenes basically, and we're gonna string them together. And they got like they hired a freelancer to be like, dude, just string these together. I don't care how. And there's shit where they're like, all right, we need to reactivate the Patriot program. The person walks from the meeting to that next room. That this thing's been active for like a bazillion years. Walks in, it's fully staffed, fully furnished, clean, with everyone doing busy work. We have to locate these four people. And within 2 minutes, they locate every single one of them and are already on a plane to go find them. I'm like, man, that...
Oh, that's a good turnaround.
That's Russian propaganda is what that is.
I'm like, that plot train ran right past the station. All right, man. But they have so much fun with the movie. It's worth...
They have like a five-year plan for the Patriot program.
Well, the problem is, like, there's also, like, weird plot holes you can drive a truck through. Like, they have this one where, like, this character sacrifices themselves to destroy this shield or whatever. And then literally jump cuts to the next scene. They run up and punch the bad guy. Perfectly fine. And you're like...
There's something missing here.
Like, maybe they could have got better, but, like, not literally, like, jump cut punch the face. Cool. No, and it's a big character like dramatic death, and then just like punch, and you're like, first one through the door was the dead person, and they never talk about it. Apparently, it bombed at the box office though, and they didn't even make their budget back. But the Chinese production company who funded them now has the rights to it and is making a sequel with a bunch of Chinese actors. So
okay.
That hot mess,
wait.
I'm just like. I don't even know what they're gonna make. I don't know, but oh my god, I want to see it.
I'm excited. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm way more excited for them to like. I have no idea what they're gonna like. They're gonna be like, oh, there was a movie with superheroes. Okay, cool. Let's just throw some Chinese actors in there. Can we get any of the other ones? Yeah, we'll get the Bear Man. And,
we only need them for one scene.
Yeah. Hey, go do it. Boom. All right. This is the Chinese Patriot Program.
Kung Fu.
I don't know. It's crazy. I love it. It will go down as one of those really bizarre oddities.
Speaking of oddities, the Super Stash. So Superman was in another movie, and they couldn't give
her the
mustache.
Six.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I guess there's a bunch of footage of the new Justice League movie where Superman has this ridiculous mustache.
And they had to spend their budget to digitally remove the mustache, which and I'm like, wait, spoiler, he's alive? Really? I thought they would kill off Superman in the second movie and never bring back their second most popular character.
Oh, I don't want to talk about that horrid thing. Although I was right about it just being a prequel for Wonder Woman, and it did a great job in that respect.
Yep.
I saw Baby Driver. It was better than I thought. It wasn't crazy good. See it if you're looking for something lighthearted, I guess. It's not very intense. And then talking about something we were talking about earlier, Nesta did a research study that concluded that the average gamer, this is just all games, like video games included, is a 43-year-old woman.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can dig it.
Yeah, that's neat. The demographics have totally switched. It is no longer 13-year-old boys.
Thank
God. It is 43-year-old women.
Not that you'd know that if you ever, you know, played multiplayer first-person shooters.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay, well,
I just got rid of Left 4 Dead off my computer. I'm just done with it.
So, that demographic has actually been around for a while since I was in my undergrad, where women are the highest percentage. Do you know why? This is even of hardcore gamers. And they define hardcore as someone who plays, like, more than 2 hours a week, I think it was. Do you know who, or
That's
more than
a
four
very
hours?
Low bar.
I think it was maybe more than 4 hours a week of continuous play or something like that. Do you know why?
Why?
Bejeweled. It has a overwhelmingly female demographic. Candy Crush, all those had a very high female demographic.
Yeah,
and people would
so
play
easy.
Those all the time. A lot of stay-at-home parents actually play it. And we're still in an era where that is primarily female. And hope to change it someday, but just be on your phone, bop, 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 literally will make you, that's a game. I mean, that's how people do it. Facebook games, too, they count.
When they get a cheap VR console, I think we'll see the demographic shift again, but probably not until that point, because mobile games on phones have taken over
the
market.
They have.
Just
definitely.
Hands down.
So the thing that will end the banality of your existence and bring you into a new realm of awesomeness, there have been two at least, I think there might have been more. I know there are two movie trailers that have been released by Nickelodeon is launching a new Rocko's Modern Life movie. And it starts off with, I don't know if it's a full movie or if it's just that little segment.
Hold on, you said a new Rocko's Modern Life movie.
Yeah. It's
like
called
a cartoon
Static
animated.
Claim, and it was set in the modern era, and it was really funny. They did a segment of it. I don't know if they're bringing that to a full movie. I hear they are. I don't know the full thing of it. But the other one is, Hey Arnold is getting a movie called The Jungle. And they released a trailer of it, and it's heartbreaking, man. It is beautiful. Go look up both of them. They are worth your watch. So look up Rocko's Modern Life.
I don't watch trailers, but I'm excited about a one-hour
TV. No, it's not like a trailer. It's like it's like the first like 5 minutes of the movie, and it just gives you the setup of it. It's like a montage of old things. It's really touching, man. It's beautiful.
I don't want any exposure. Early is bad.
All right. Well, I'm just letting you know that both those things are coming out, and I'm so excited for that.
No, that sounds awesome.
Nick is not destroying his old IPs.
My favorite. Like that's awesome.
I think the Static Cling thing is just a short segment, and that's I'm not sure if they're doing more of it or not. But if it is, it's self-contained, is what it is. And it's basically mock.
Oh. you know, I saw something neat this week that was cool and had a lot of things. It was involved Jim Henson's alternative Muppets.
Huh.
It's called Neil Patrick Harris's Puppet Dreams.
Oh, no, that's been around for a while. Yeah, I love
that. Yeah, I didn't know about it. I just found out about it and watched, I don't know, about half of them. They're pretty fucking fun.
They're hilarious. Isn't it on YouTube? Yeah.
It is. It's free on YouTube.
Yeah, it's free on YouTube.
Check them out after this.
Yeah, what's his name? Nathan Fillion appears in one of them, and they have the best back and forth. It is great writing on that one.
Yeah, that was, I don't know if it was great writing.
I thought it was great writing. I had a blast. Funny.
Anyway, current Kickstarters. Princess Bride card game?
That's been out for a while. They're doing a 30th anniversary edition with a bit of an expansion.
Oh wow, they funded real fast.
Oh, they I think they were funded when
they were only asking for $100.
Wait, really?
And that was their goal, yes. They are at 6,000.
Okay, so they made their goal whatever
it
was.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
It's inconceivable that they would fail.
Inconceivable. But yeah.
The other one is just something I love is they have this halfling skeleton army that this company's been producing for a while. I don't know. It's just adorable, and I think they're adding This is their third Kickstarter for it. And I think they're adding the Lancers or the Cavalry, and it's just adorable. Like, not really adorable. They're adorable undead halflings, and like, I would play that army. I don't care what game. I just play it.
They do look cute.
Yep. So yeah, Jax. Aww. Oh, sorry, Mike. You got anything else for the Kickstarters?
No, I'm just looking at the pictures. They are very cute.
Yep.
They are.
Pull it up here.
I mean, there was a feat in, 3.5 that let multiple halflings be in the same 5-foot square.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so you just have a bunch of intelligent skeletal halflings who can all just, like, stack on top of each other and be this hurricane of halflings. Skeleton halflings.
And their little skulls are adorable. Mm. Well, you can do that with kobolds in Pathfinder.
I like the drummer. The drummer is the cutest by far.
Anyway, hordes for $280.
Jax, what do you want to talk about? It's your free discussion time.
Yeah, Jax, it's all yours, man.
Oh, gosh. So is this free discussion or Kickstarters now? I'm lost.
Let's say,
whatever you want to talk about.
Kickstarters, and then you have free reign to talk about whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, Kickstarter that you're interested in. Now's the time to bring it up.
Undead Chicken Standard.
I don't know. I funded both the Kickstarters I'm interested in. Let me see if this one is still going. Hold on.
Ooh, an adorable.
Could be one that you
dogs.
Just got the rewards on or something. That's cool too.
Oh well. Okay. Ghost Court actually funded a while back. Jason Morningstar's Ghost Court. I'm super excited because I finally got my reward for that, and it's amazing. I don't know if you're familiar with Ghost Court at all.
Checking it out now. Yeah.
It's just an improv LARP.
Yeah.
And what happens is each player gets a one scene role, and you can play multiple characters in the LARP. And you're either a defendant or a prosecutor. And you are a mortal or a ghost, and it's the court that negotiates between the living and the dead.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's hilarious. It's so funny. It's really good. The Chronicles of Darkness Dark Eras 2 Kickstarter is still going, and you should totally help fund that, because it's awesome. A lot of my good friends are working on Dark Eras 2.
They got 9 days left, and they're at 49,000. They asked for 40,000. They are funded, so it's a sure thing.
Yes, but you should totally get them more funded, because the stretch goals are amazing. Because normally their Kickstarters, at least from what I've noticed, tend to sort of have a tendency to go at least 500% over. But this one is a little slower, and that kind of sucks. So you should go get them over farther.
Only 500.
The Kickstarter market has changed.
Yep.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people more skeptical these days. And
yeah.
Is this a World of Darkness thing?
It's a Chronicles of Darkness.
So I think that's World of Darkness adjacent?
No,
or Chronicles is it like...
Okay, so Chronicles of Darkness is what was called the New World of Darkness.
Mm.
The World of Darkness is currently being owned by White Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
White Wolf Productions, I think it's now being called. Yeah. Which is okay. A company that is owned by Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Productions holds the licenses, which Onyx Path rents the licenses from. So, New World of Darkness is now called Chronicles of Darkness, so they don't have to keep calling it New and Old World of Darkness or New and Classic World of Darkness.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, okay. Anything you see that is Chronicles of Darkness is New World of Darkness 2nd Edition.
Mm.
And that's what I was talking about stuff I'm working on. Like, I'm working on the 2nd Edition of Changeling the Lost, and it's amazing. Edition of Demon the Descent. Well, 1st Edition of Demon the Descent, I guess. Anyway, Demon the Descent is fucking amazing, and you guys should all play it immediately right now. Because it's a weird Gnostic espionage cyberpunk thing.
I like it.
Okay. It's super good. It's so good. If you've ever read the Pain Prophecy, the story in the 1st edition of New World of Darkness in the Blue Book, you know what I'm talking about, right, Savannah?
I'm sorry, could you...
You've played the World of Darkness Portal.
Yes.
You know in the Blue Book, there's the pieces of fluff text in the beginning.
Which you know the best pain part.
The Pain Prophecy of Marco Singe.
Not specifically. It's been a while since I, like, sat and read through the book.
What has fallen may rise again.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
The Descent is an entire game based on that story.
Oh, that's really cool.
Awesome. You should play it. It's super good. And I'm not just saying this because I wrote for it.
That's fair. Well, nothing else. If there's a Friday that we don't have our mortal game for whatever reason, we may have to sub in a demon.
Yeah, you should definitely do that.
Oh, darn. Sounds terrible.
Yeah, the burdens we bear.
So what's terrible is I love demons, but I don't actually think the demons are the most interesting part about demon.
Fair.
The most interesting part about demon are stigmata. Which are the mortals who came into contact with pieces of the God Machine and are now blessed and or cursed to see pieces of the God Machine wherever they go because it's interlaced throughout the entire world.
Okay. That sounds problematic for them.
Yeah. So they're, tragic.
That's kind of fun.
But they also have tiny amounts of superpowers, and I find that really interesting.
That's part of what I really liked about Hunter, like Old World Hunter. Like, you have tiny amounts of powers, you may be utterly insane, and you're just as squishy as a person. Now go fight that werewolf.
Okay, you had an ass ton of powers in Old World as compared to New World.
I try and pretend that New World Hunter never exists.
I love New World Hunter. I'll fight you.
All right, we will duke it out later because I cut my teeth on World of Darkness in Hunter, so it's my baby.
That's fair. I really care about Hunter the Vigil for a lot of reasons.
Fair.
So I will fight you and take your bird.
Oh,
that's mean.
I'll warn you. Her favorite things are crapping all over you and then walking through it.
That sounds awesome.
I always feel
but yeah, no, when I found out that New World Hunters could actually be turned into vampires, it's like, well, clearly you shouldn't have sent a lower H hunter to do a capital H hunter's job. Because Old World Hunters cannot be turned into vampires.
That's true.
Also, to be fair, Old World Hunters were never meant to integrate with the other World of Darkness systems. Like, they fought vampires and werewolves, but they certainly never were meant to fight Guru and Kindred.
Yeah.
We merged them anyway because that's cooler, but, you know, it's not very survivable. The answer is just have a lot of money, invest in a machine gun belt of silver bullets, and go to town.
As humans do.
Yes.
So is there anything else you want to touch on at the end here?
I don't know. I always feel when I'm like out of my element when you guys start talking about Vampire, because I played a couple of games that fizzled out, and then I played a bunch of Aberrant games, but it was heavily modified, so it's, you know.
Aberrant is amazing, and I'm super hyped for the Trinity Continuum to come out. It's going to be so good.
And I hope, my experience with it is... I've read the books. They're very interesting. I played in one game. The guys were really...
That might be the players, though.
It was definitely the players, and I just never got back into it because of that.
The first time we played it, we played two or three games, and I had the summoner power, and that was just grossly... Yeah, no good. And then the Wolverine guy was also way out there in terms of, like, the balance. And then we...
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.